What's up, podcast peeps? Andy here with Clear Mind Events. You are about to hear part two of our anxiety episode. This is episode 5, Anxiety Still Alive.
I can see why it can be more nerve-wracking for some rather than others. Like, if you're a big dude, you're pretty much all right, generally. Like, you're at the show, you're a big dude, no one's going to mess with you. They might want to, you know, mosh with you. But for the most part, you're going to be good. You're a short girl like me, you got to be careful. You have to watch, like, where you're going.
You know, see.
And, yeah, I mean, like, I'm pretty good at shoving people back, too. But short girls do not have the greatest time in GA. Just so you you got to find that person who will put you, like, in front, but, like, to where it's not, like, an issue. I don't know.
What sucked was growing up, my dad didn't take me to live shows. And that was because, I mean, I joke that I was 4 feet tall when I came out of my mother's womb. But I was really, really tall. So people thought I was older than what I was. And so my dad was concerned that, you know, people would treat me differently because of how tall I was. And they thought that I was older. So I didn't, unfortunately, get to experience a whole lot of shows and stuff in high school. So now I make up for it. Something I do want to say while I'm thinking about it is, we're not complaining about crowd surfing or moshing and things like that. Cause I will say this about, rock and metal people is, you know, 99% of the people that you meet, like when I fell, it was dark and I thought for sure, this is it. I'm getting trampled. And I'm telling you, I really, if that had been a pop concert or something, but I had 12 people with a hand out. I remember two people hollering, "Hey, we've got somebody down, stop." And it was like, they were telling people further back, like, "Stop for a second. We've got somebody down." And actually, I think that was the year that we had someone fall during Limp Bizkit. Like, the crowd collapsed because they were squished in so much. And Fred Durst, like, he stopped the show to make sure everybody was okay. When I saw Papa Roach at Rupp Arena, one of the girls, I actually met her in line. People were moshing, and she got her ankle hurt really bad. He stopped the show. He said, "Part the waters." And security, they took her up front and they got her up over the rail. And, you know, he's like, you know, are you okay? He like stops and talks to her. "Are you okay?" You know, and he's like, "Be safe, Angel." He was just so sweet. So I don't want people who go to rock and metal festivals to get a bad rap by the people who have not experienced the culture. We do look out for each other. We really do. And yeah, if somebody were to fall in a pit, it halts. Yep. And they get that person back up, you know. And that's one thing that I do love about our group is, for the most part, people look out for each other, and it's a family.
Metal shows honestly have the best camaraderie. The people I've met at metal shows, the people like friends, like this one chick that I met at Aftershock in 2017, we recognized each other in the Aftershock Festival family group. We talked once back then, but we totally recognized.
Nice.
That we had met before. I'll say the one, just not to be off topic, but like the worst crowds ever are rap shows.
Yes.
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 True story.
The girls are mean. The guys are assholes. Generally, it's like when I saw Snoop Dogg, he was 3 hours late, and I was talking to this dude about it.
Damn.
And his girlfriend got mad at me for talking to him, and I'm like, "Your man was talking to me, but we were both just making the observation. Snoop Dogg is 3 hours late." You know, but it was not cool. Like, yikes. At a rock show, she would have been in on that conversation. You know what I mean?
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. And it made me think about it because I was given all these like negative examples about what can happen at a show. So I wanted people to know that, like, hey, even though I'm talking about these negative experiences that I've had, the positive, like, far, far outweighs the negative. Yeah, I think, I know, like, one thing that I love that you had mentioned in the last episode, Tara, you talk about the fact that you do your research and you plan. And you're like, okay, I'm going to get here at this time. And here's what I'm going to wear. You are very much like a big picture thinker and you plan ahead of time. And like you have an action plan, you're very organized. And you know, that's probably why you're so awesome with your company because of that. And you know, that made me think about, you know, there are ways that people can identify things that do cause them to have that anxiety and prepare for it in advance, because you talked about how, you know, you're very prepared, so you don't what's the word I'm looking for, like, you're not stressed about going to a new venue or
no not really generally though, like, I do a lot of traveling, so the driving thing's not really an aspect for me. It's like an Uber more type situation. Uber there, cab out.
There you go.
Never Uber out. They multiply that by 4 or 5 times. You set up a cab company and they won't do that to you. I'm just saying it. Like, I'll have everything planned. This is what we're going to do. I'm not saying like the entire day is planned, but let's leave it this time. I don't necessarily have to be like the first one in the door, but I like to be there when it's light so I can see my seats and stuff like that. You know, this particular friend doesn't care. Like, we missed Gary Clark Jr. because she was taking too long to get ready.
And
was
that drives me crazy.
Yeah. I'm like, dude, we paid for these tickets. Can't we just plan? Now, here's what happens there, though. Maybe I have anger issues. Maybe that's my deal. Because I get all pissed off when it doesn't go. I'm like, hold on a second here. There's no reason. We've had 5 or 6 hours today to plan. I am definitely not pushing you when we have all that much time. I've told you an hour ago, this is when the cab's going to be here. And you can't be ready? We've had like half a day.
Yep.
I mean, oh God, I'm going to get in trouble for this one. Because trust me, I don't think she listens. But anyway. Those little things bother me. Like, I just like to have everything, you know, go smoothly. I don't like to be the same thing, same friend. We were at a show in Spokane. I was like lining us up like a ride and stuff. And then she started talking to this dude who like took us on a walk because he like couldn't find something or someone, or it was really ridiculous. Actually, I don't even think we should have been with this guy. And then before you know it, like an hour's going by and we're walking around downtown Spokane at night. And I'm like, can't we just get a ride? You know, like, what's this?
Mm-hmm.
It's just not that hard to, you get it, Andy, you're like that too.
Yep.
You plan and.
Yep. I think, I really think my anxiety has made me that like organized planner, and here's how I'm going to approach it. What I am finding now though is that like, let's say we were all gonna get together for lunch or something, I might get there like right at the time that we're supposed to get there, or I might be like 5 minutes late. They call that fashionably late, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But and it's one of those that, like, there's so much in my life that I try to be early for that I'm finding now that there are certain things, like, if it's a family get together, I'm like, I don't care if I get there 30 minutes late.
I'm the same way on that, too.
I don't care.
But, like, when you've paid for an event that has a certain time that a certain band is going to start, and, you know, it's not anymore like you don't want to skip your openers, because your openers are kind of like the next best thing, and they might be something that, you know, you just didn't know about, that you've, like Gary Clark Jr., for example. He wasn't big back then. Look at him now.
Exactly.
He's amazing. And he would have been amazing. You know, Dave Grohl doesn't pick people who suck for openers. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? So I don't know. Like, I think that when people just have like so little, consideration, or I don't know. Something that definitely gets my nerves up.
Yeah. And that's the best time to see a new band. is before they get big.
Absolutely.
That's the best time.
I mean, you know, listen to all those old timers who are like, well, at the rainbow, for example, this fake background I've got going on. You know, that's where a lot of rock and roll really started. You know, I mean, the Doors were discovered right down the block at the Whiskey A Go-Go. You know what I mean? Old timers saw them for like $5, maybe. Like, I mean, that's pretty awesome. And I've seen some, well, like when I saw 311 in 98, I saw Incubus open for them, and that was Science. Okay. Like Brandon had dreads.
Nice.
So they were not big yet at all.
And that is why you support the openers, guys. You give them the same energy that you give the headliner. And, you know, if you like their music, then, you know, go buy their EP, go buy something. It helps support them. And it's best to meet them when they first start out and get stuff signed, because later on, those meet and greets, they really add up. Like I'm seen Bad Flower so many times, and they blew up so quick. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm very thankful that I got to see them when they were first starting out. And I know, like Josh, he struggles with anxiety, and it can cause panic attacks. And even though he loves being on the stage so much and he loves sharing his music with people, there were times that, you know, he had a hard time getting on the stage because of his anxiety. And I mean, you wouldn't really know it, because when he comes out there, you know, it's this cool, calm duck, but, you know, beneath the water, the little feet are going like this, you know?
Janis Joplin, she had serious stage fright and anxiety, and that's why she used so many drugs before she performed.
Yeah.
I don't know if you knew that, but just like Bad Flower. But he didn't use drugs. I'm just saying, like, anyway.
Yeah, the anxiety with the performing. Did anyone in your screening, do you feel distressed when things are not done perfectly or a certain way? I've already confessed that I'm a perfectionist. Is anybody else in that category at all?
I think I kind of just did that.
I was going to say, you're grinning.
I was that way as a bar manager too, but yeah. What about you, Eric?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, most of mine stems from my service in the military, my time as a firefighter. So when you're in that line of work, if things don't go a certain way, well, not to sound rude, but people can die.
Exactly.
So there are certain things that I have to do a certain way. And if I don't do them that way, I don't want to say I freak out, but I kind of freak out. So yeah, that's definitely me. Yeah, one of the things that popped up on there was obsessive compulsive disorder.
Ah.
Yeah. So I do have OCD on certain things. Big time.
I remember a question about do you feel the need to do certain things, otherwise you think something bad will happen? And I know it also mentioned counting in that question as well. Sometimes I do find myself counting on my fingers. And I haven't really identified if it's when I'm anxious or not. But one thing I have noticed is if I'm counting with my right hand, I don't go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. If I'm doing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I have to do it with my left hand, which I think is a weird little thing. I don't know.
That makes sense though, because it'd be like if you were going
left or right.
Reading it. Yeah.
But yeah. I'll find myself counting.
Counting. I check to make sure things are unplugged a lot.
Yeah.
That's one thing that I've got. And that I'll be like, oh God, did I unplug that? And then I might go back and check, even though there's like absolutely no way I didn't, you know, but
that's a really good one. Really good one. Yeah, I'm very much a perfectionist, and, that's like, where is it? where did I put the lights? I'll buy stuff and it'll sit in a box for 6 months because I'm that perfectionist and the stars have to perfectly align for me to do something. And it can definitely lead to procrastination as well, because if I'm going to do it, I want to do it right the first time. So I'm automatically setting myself up for failure. But yeah, I bought some lights, and it's the little like strip lights. I've got some that are LED black light, and then I've got some that you can change the colors on them, and they're sticky. And so the way that my mind processes is, okay, I need to measure where do I want them, and I need to make sure that where they start is near an outlet because they have to be plugged in. And then once I stick them up, you know, they're going to have to stay there. So I'm like putting all these obstacles in the way, whereas a lot of people would have probably put these up the first weekend that they got them. And I'm pretty sure I've had these at least 3 months and I've not put them up yet because of my anxiety and wanting to do stuff perfectly. That was one that came up for me, the need to do stuff perfectly. And then something else that came up was fear of humiliation or embarrassment. It says associated with social situations. Strangers don't bother me. But now, like what you guys think would be important to me. Same thing at work. You know, people that I already know, if I'm having to do a class for people who have already been on the floor, I'm more nervous and anxious. Whereas if it's new hires, new employees coming into the building, I'm not as nervous. Interviewing, I have for whatever reason, interviewing within the same company, I get super nervous. But if I'm interviewing with an outside company, people I've never met before, those interviews do awesome. I know. It's like, because you don't know what else to say about it, right? Oh, my goodness. Eric, what's something else that came up on your quiz?
Oh, gosh. Let me see. Let me get a better look at it. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 things popped up. One of them was agoraphobia.
Really?
Yeah.
So it said that you have a tendency for that?
Yeah. Agoraphobia, for those of you tuning in that don't know what that is a fear of places and situations that might cause panic, helplessness, or embarrassment. It is an anxiety disorder that often develops after one or more panic attacks. There are certain situations and certain things that I will avoid. You know, like, for instance, when I get down, like when I go down for training at the firehouse, I will not drive in the slow lane going southbound at the 87 mile marker. I will not. I will get all the way over in the fast lane at the 87 mile marker just to dart all the way back over 3 lanes over to get off at the next exit. Back in 2014, we had a line of duty death on my fire department. It was my best friend. We were out fighting a van fire and at 3:30 in the morning, and a semi truck driver, wasn't paying attention.
I remember.
Yep. And hit, my best friend was on the pump panel. His mom was on top of the truck handing foam down, and the semi truck driver hit right where he was standing at about 80 mile an hour.
Yeah.
And so I will not drive
that in the into that lane.
Yeah, I will not drive in there just because that's where my best friend was. And I still to this day feel like I would be driving on top of him, and I'm not going to do that. So I will slow down to get all the way over and then dart back across. That I won't so much avoid other places, but there are other things that I will drive around and be like, okay, I had this incident at this, you know, this house. I drive around all the time. You know, you can ask my wife, she'll know. If we're down in that area, I'll tell her, it was like, you know, I had this accident at this intersection. this accident here, we had a house fire here, so on and so forth. But you know, there are certain things, really that one spot on I-65 is about the only one that I will avoid.
I appreciate you talking about that, because I thought agoraphobia was someone who they were fearful of leaving the house. And I'm sure there's different levels to it. Mm-hmm. Now that you've explained that, that does make sense to me. The accident that I had, gosh, I hadn't even been at my new job 90 days. Had this horrible car accident. Hopefully, knock on wood, it's the only one I ever have. Over half my body was bruised. But I know now that you talk about that, that lane that I was in when I hit them, I won't be in that lane anymore, because it gave me such a blind spot, because this person was turning left across three lanes of traffic. So they were the opposite way. And so now I'm in that middle lane in order to get onto the I-75 ramp. Mm-hmm. And I'm always like frantically watching and scanning that area for someone turning left. But when I start getting close to it, I will slow down and I look to see if there's anybody in that left turn lane. I've noticed that now. I didn't think about that.
It's almost like a traumatic experience causes you to become hyper aware of certain situations. But I wouldn't say it caused me to be hyper aware. I'll just avoid it at all costs. 90% of the time, I will get off the exit prior. And I will add another 10 minutes onto my route just to avoid it, just so I don't have to drive by it.
Because you probably get those flashbacks of working the accident.
Yep.
I remember that. Because they got there before you did.
Yes.
Yep. Let me see here. So I am likely to have generalized anxiety disorder, which I do have that. Mm-hmm. I was surprised. But then once I started reading up on it, I made so much more sense, as if that were possible. It does have social anxiety disorder on there. But I wonder if that has to do with work. PTSD is on there, which that does make sense. Some things that I experienced in my childhood that I'm just not comfortable talking about at this point, but I do have it. It says phobia related to a specific object or situation. I love you, Papa Roach, but there for a little bit, there was a phobia of being in crowds, and I admitted I didn't listen to Face Everything and Rise for a while either, because that was the song that it happened on. OCD is on here. I'll have to look at that. Problem anxiety not related to one specific anxiety disorder. So apparently I'm just a mixed bag. I am just a potpourri of anxiety, I guess. So, Eric, you said that you had 9 on your list?
Yep. The only ones, the ones you just described, I had those as well. And it had panic disorder, agoraphobia, and illness anxiety.
Okay.
As well.
Hmm. So. Yeah, I know you've had a lot of health issues, though, especially with your knee.
Yeah.
And so I know for you, when certain things do happen, you probably do, you know, you've kind of been trained to kind of get ahead of it. And you probably have to overcompensate just to make sure that it's not going to end up being something serious, though.
Right. Yeah. Especially with, you know, something simple, or I don't want to say something simple, but something small to me, you know, I would do all kinds of research and everything like that because of all the health issues that run in my family. You know,
got you.
You know, cancer runs prevalent in my family, leukemia, diabetes, you know, a lot of the big bad ones, you know, and I do everything I can. And sometimes I get my anxiety just overtakes me trying to make sure the planets aren't aligning right. You know, if that makes sense, you know, and it just, it, it takes its toll on me. And I think that's where my illness anxiety kicks in. And sometimes it causes a simple thing to kind of get a little worse. So.
I can see that. We can kind of train ourselves to anticipate the worst, because the last thing we want is the rug pulled out from under us. So yes. We can kind of over research and overcompensate, which can be stressful in itself. But my whole attitude is, well, I'm the person that if I'm going to have a procedure, I will get online and I will look for YouTube videos.
I did not go that far, but I looked up so many different things as far as like, what can I eat and drink afterward, this and that, like what's going to lead up. Seriously, I was supposed to have my oral surgery a couple weeks ago, but then my dentist got COVID. And so it got pushed out, and I had the hardest time sleeping as I was getting myself prepared for that first appointment that was supposed to happen. Now I'm in the same boat, so just trying not to, you know, research and do all that. Now, the thing about mine was, it said I'm unlikely to have symptoms with about 8 different things. A lot of
That's
the stuff
good,
you
though.
Just mentioned.
Okay.
One thing that I do have a problem with when it comes to socializing.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom's really gotten into my head living in a small town.
Mm-hmm.
So like anytime I go out, she's got me worried that people are going to turn around and talk about the fact that I just went out. Even though I'm totally cool when I go out, minus karaoke not that long ago, but that was still cool. You know, I mean, it's like, okay, so I live here, but yet I can't, like, sometimes I feel like I can't comfortably actually go be myself because she's just got me so worried that it's going to turn into some small town talk. That definitely makes me nervous. For sure. And I'm trying to realize, because I've told my mom several times, nobody gives a shit about what you're doing. Like, honestly, if you think they do, they don't. If you really think that they're talking about you, they're not. And like, for example, I went out the other night and now I'm like, were people saying that I went out? Did someone say I went to the bar? Like, you know, so I just stay home all the time. And I'm kind of a hermit now, which I was never, ever a hermit before. I moved into a small town.
That's why you travel out of state and you go to music festivals where nobody's really going to know you.
Yeah. And then COVID hit though. So then there you go. A year of nothing.
Yeah. You got a point there.
So Eric, I have to ask, did you feel that pressure growing up that, you know, you have to look a certain way when you go out in public or people are going to talk about you?
Yes.
Did you experience that?
Yes. Even though I grew up in Louisville, you know, which is a big city, my father was a police officer. And once I graduated fifth grade, that was the time that he became a DARE instructor. And that was back when there was maybe 20 to 30 for all of the city of Louisville DARE instructors. So we were constantly, you know, I was constantly going with him to some of these events. You know, we were on the news frequently. Me and my father taught after school karate at an elementary school. So the news was constantly coming out. So we were kind of, I don't want to say in the limelight, but growing up, you know, with him as a police officer and traveling, going to knife shows, you know, I did kind of have to mind my P's and Q's. But I was young enough that I didn't really do anything other than spend time with my friends in the neighborhood.
Nice.
So
I wonder if that's a generational thing, because I will tell you, I remember my grandmother being very mindful of what she wore when she went out in public. And my mom is very much the same way. And kind of comes and goes for me, you know? But I wouldn't, I mean, unless I'm just feeling, unless something's going on, like I've got a medical issue or I'm really, really sick, I'm not going to wear pajamas in Walmart. Like, that's the deal breaker. but yeah. So I kind of wondered if it was a gender expectation or not, which is why I asked, because like my mom was very focused on, you know, what will people think? What will people say?
It gets almost paralyzing, especially as a single woman. I can't go out and again, it's not like I go out and raise holy hell or anything like that. And you can edit this part out because if my mom listens, I don't want her to hear. Okay. People have told me my mom's a barfly.
Aww.
So there's that.
I thought that.
like, my mom goes
out. Was she back in the day?
No, like recently.
Hmm.
Like my mom goes out more than most people.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's just kind of, kind of interesting. Yeah, do not put that part in there.
Yeah, I'll take it out. Okay. I know. I remember it was summertime. I was working at, it was a factory, and I was in the cafeteria area. I was supposed to do vending, but he ended up putting me in the kitchen. It's kind of interesting because he never let any females do the vending. Even though that's what I was hired for. And after there were two guys that got hired after me that he trained on vending, he kept saying, once I get this person trained, I'll train you. And it never happened. So when the second guy got hired and he was training him to do the vending, I quit. But I remember, and I had a long-term relationship. I was domesticated at the time. We lived together and, there was this girl that I worked with, and she was going around telling everybody that we knew. I mean, she made it sound like I was straight up skanking. I mean, she made it sound like I didn't take a bath, that I didn't wear clean clothes. It was awful, but made the remark. And I guess it had to do with the way that she saw my ex, maybe my ex moron, but she made the remark, well, I guess she'll just lie down right in the dirt with him. And I had a friend reach out to me like, you know, are you okay? And I was like, yeah, I'm good. Why? What's up? And she told me this when I came over to hang out, and she's like, I just, you know, she's talking really bad about you. And I was like, what do you mean? And she's like, well, she said you don't do anything to yourself. And I'm like, what do you mean? And I was like, are you kidding me? This is a factory. And I was in a cafeteria. You have to have your hair up because of the health department. I'm not wearing pearls and earrings and putting my hair up in a ponytail and flipping my bangs and wearing a bunch of makeup to sweat in a kitchen. It's not happening. So I didn't wear makeup and I didn't wear nice polo shirts. I mean, it was a nice clean t-shirt and jeans, and I usually tuck the shirt in and I would have my hair up in a ponytail. But yeah, so because I didn't dress like her with the pearls or the gold chain and the earrings and had my hair up in a ponytail, and she had the white ribbon. It was always a white ribbon. But anyway, she'd have a polo shirt on, a nice polo shirt. It's like, this is cafeteria. Okay. But yeah. So she was, you know, talking all over town about how, I guess I was, what is it? Pigpen?
Yeah.
Charlie Brown. Yeah. Yes. So she was talking like I was running around like Pigpen. It was funny. It was hilarious. Sorry.
Something just popped up at the top of my screen, but it went away. Huh. So we had a bad network there for a second.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. And that's the thing too, is that the other people who are, because I'm considered a professional in this town. When I've been out, which is the few times I've gone, I've seen them out too. So
yeah.
I think really I just need to get out of my head when it comes to that, because it's kind of ridiculous to think that you can't go and be yourself in the town that you live in, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So
that's pretty tough. Well, I think if anything, you know, it's pretty clear that, you know, anxiety does manifest itself in so many different ways. And, you know, like our quiz results, we were surprised at some of the things we got. And then we were like, wow, I really thought that would have been mine, or I didn't think that would be one of mine. But, you know, again, we're not here to diagnose or treat or anything like that. Definitely, you know, go see a professional. Totally forgot what I was going to say, which is actually an anxiety response in itself. I do that at work all the time, but anxiety does manifest itself in so many different ways. And for me, and I think for especially like for Eric, and like you said, you know, it said you had a little bit, but not a whole lot, but you said you're very professional and you're a planner. So sometimes we can struggle because we are a high functioning person. We learn how to manage it and mask it and hide it, right? So a lot of people who go far in companies and are professional and find themselves in very successful roles, they end up in those roles because of the things that they have learned for managing their anxiety. I know we did this activity for our holiday Zoom meet for work, and they were surprised that I had put down that I was the person who would procrastinate and buy a Christmas gift at the last minute. And the entire group was like, no way. Like, I could see you as someone like, you're buying Christmas gifts 6 months in advance. And I'm like, no, not really. About 3 months before, I might kind of start getting stuff, but I'm definitely the person who I do that shopping in November and December. And I am very much getting a gift for somebody at the last minute. And they're just like, wow, I never would have thought that. But like, was it Eric? I'm talking about picking and choosing your battles. Sometimes you give so much in one aspect of your life that something else has to give. And I, you talked about your dad in the DARE program, and it's so funny now to hear them say that, you know, they said weed and marijuana was the gateway drug, right?
Yeah.
I really feel that anxiety is that gateway disorder to having other challenges.
Yeah.
Because I know for me, when I am home, my place is very disorganized, and I have figured out that because of the amount of energy that I have to spend being successful at work, that something else in my life has to take a back seat to it. So I am one that I will get something out and I will not put it back for a week or two or three. Yeah. And it drives my mother absolutely batty. So I've tried to like train myself that if I'm at her place upstairs, that I try to do how she would want me to do before leaving, because I'll forget, and then it's there for a week and it's driving her insane, and that's completely understandable. It's her space and I need to be respectful of that. But yeah, so I will definitely be super cluttered in my personal life. My poor Jeep, there's so much stuff in there right now, oh my god. Because I've had to be so high functioning with my anxiety in my professional life that sometimes I don't have anything else to give, and I'm going to make my work come first. Because that's what brings home the cash so I can pay for all the concert tickets. I have learned, where was I going with that? I'm in the weeds. Anxiety can be that gateway disorder to other things like OCD and hoarding. There's so many things that they can start out as high functioning anxiety or high functioning depression, which you guys that are listening, definitely. Definitely listen for episode 4, but definitely, yeah, episode 4, because, you know, we will be talking about depression on episode 4. This one is 1-2, anxiety's coming for you. So episode 4 will be 3-4, depression's knocking at your door, because anxiety can lead to depression. And I'm feeling really awkward right now for sharing that with you guys and on the podcast. But I'm just hoping that by sharing that with somebody that you know, that they'll get help, just because they don't, like you said, we worry about how people talk, right? Mm-hmm. So you kind of try to push stuff down and you try to mask it and you try to hide it and you make excuses. And then before you know it, like it's so big, right? And one of the things that we wanted to do with Clear Mind Events is we want to destigmatize and we want to normalize talking about these things and take away some of that shame that we feel with these challenges. Do either of you, because I mean, both of you have, you know, you've got really professional jobs. God, that sounds horrible. But you know, in your jobs, do you guys find that because of the role that you have at your job, that there's so much organization and there's so much that you put into it, that there's another piece of your life that has to kind of take a back seat in order for you to function?
Yes, I can honestly say that. My apartment's way cluttered. Like,
see, I wouldn't have thought that.
You wouldn't have thought that?
No.
Oh, there's a reason you never see anything around me. Just I'm bad. I'm cluttered. Like this morning, Nikki woke me up by knocking all my DVDs out of one of my shelves. She didn't knock the shelf over. She knocked all of that. Like, it was three shelves worth, three levels. Boom. They're still on the floor.
You can't deal with it right now.
Yeah. And I find myself exhausted actually when I get home. Like, I have all these things that I want to do. I want to work out. I want to do this. You know, I have like all these things that I want to do, but then after work, because I do have such an important role at the office, it's not that every role is not important. I just have a lot of, how do I put this?
You have a lot on your plate.
I'm in all the different departments. Yeah. I'm the one who has like my hand in everything, if that makes sense. Whereas like not everybody else really does. So, I have a lot on my plate and a lot. I just got a raise and a promotion, which is wonderful. But then there's more that comes, you know, more responsibility. So,
yeah,
I mean, like, especially since someone's coming to stay with me this week, I know I need to get it together and clean. And there's the procrastination. I don't want to. I'm tired, you know.
That is actually an anxiety response, that if something is, and I hate saying traumatic, but I mean, that's what it is. Like, if it was uncomfortable and it was a very negative experience, we try to avoid it at all costs. So if you find, like, if you've only moved during traumatic situations, you're going to hate moving. If usually you clean when there's something stressful or traumatic going down, then you're going to associate organization and cleaning with that negative traumatic feeling that, and it left me again. Oh my goodness. But an anxiety response is we avoid that thing at all costs, right? It's negative. And we would rather just not do it at all or even get around it, like avoiding that stretch of the highway, right?
Yep.
Avoiding that lane.
Yep.
Because that's just, you know, that's the easiest, is just avoid it. So I will procrastinate about cleaning and straightening up. And the fates gave me a huge rude awakening because our furnace went out last Sunday. And this place was an absolute mess because sinuses and being sick, my mother being sick, and just being wore out and exhausted from work and training and, you know, woe is me, poor pitiful me, not like anybody else is not working right now, right? But so you let stuff take a back seat, and it just, it piles up. And then it's like, holy shit, I need to let these people in to look at this furnace. Mm-hmm. And I had to move all this furniture around. And I mean, the 2 days that they had to be here. So for about 3 days, like, I did not sleep good. Now, once they were done and the furnace was fixed, I relaxed. And my body was so tense and sore afterward because I had all of that like bundled up in me. Because I had strangers coming over and my place was just disastrous. Oh God.
Well, and one thing I can say, because I used to be really, really bad. Luckily now, if I clean, it's only going to take me a couple hours and it'll look good, right? It won't look like mom pristine, but it will look good. If you let it, it's not much, but then you add more and more and more and more to it, it can become so overwhelming that you just throw up your hands. That's how I used to be. Like, I had some horrible places. Like, I'm embarrassed to even admit it, but I did. And it's like, I go, oh, I can do this later. I can do this later. And then before you knew it, same thing, like you're talking, landlord wants to come do an inspection. And I'm like, oh, that's not good. Let's do what we can do to keep that from ever happening. You know, now I'm cool. Like, just, you know, give me a heads up a couple hours and I'll get it going. But it can get pretty bad. When you have an issue with just like clutter, not even necessarily just like the cleanliness, but all the clutter. And like you said, the hoarding type situation where it just starts to pile up. That's when you just throw up your hands. And then, and also a clean environment makes you feel so much better because the chaos is all that clutter. And then that just adds to whatever's going on up there.
I'm telling you, this was the kick in the pants that I needed because, you know, I had to do a major straightening up in the living room area so that they could get to the furnace and stuff. And I just realized like how much better I feel that area is straightened up now. And so that's kind of been like the kick in the pants for me to continue it throughout the rest of the place, because every time I've moved, it's been chaotic and it's been rushed. Just an absolute hot mess. And I'm one of those, when I get pissed off, I clean. So I'm automatically putting cleaning, which should be a fantastic, wonderful thing. I'm putting it in that negative space, because usually when I'm pissed off, I'll clean. Or I'm rushing to clean and declutter because someone's got to come over to fix something, right? And that's something that I've got to work on myself.
Sometimes schedules help. Sorry, I was just saying sometimes schedules help.
Yes.
Believe it or not, if you go online, you can find a very basic cleaning schedule. You can find a daily, a weekly, and a monthly. Like, here's what you should do every month. Here's what you should do every day. And it's kind of cool if you follow it. Like, it actually works.
I made one for myself. It was really cool. The struggle that I had was I had to tell myself, like, okay, if, like, for example, the bathroom was, like, my Monday thing. And I had to give myself a time. So I said 30 minutes. And if you don't feel like doing it, then you don't feel like doing it. Don't stress and try to do it Tuesday. And I would make it a snowball effect. And so then nothing would get done because I felt guilty that I didn't clean the bathroom on Monday. So then Tuesday, the utility room didn't get touched. And I mean, and it's my own doing. That perfection is just, oh, it's a mess. One thing that you had mentioned was you talked about how, you know, you want to work out, but you know, the energy trying to work out when you get home. Like that's the best I ever felt. And I feel like my anxiety was very low at that time when I was working out. Just because it does give you those feel goods when you work out. I know that's not the best scientific term for it. So that's my goal, is to just be more active this year. Because I do know that exercise will help my anxiety. So that's, you know, don't ask me how well I'm going like 24 days into the year with that. Which you, on the other hand, you've done wonderful. You've been doing the bar fitness, right?
Yeah, but I gave it up a little bit when my tooth started hurting. And then I just.
Yeah, that's right.
Like a woe is me type situation. Actually, that girl just reached out to me who runs that online program. See how I'm doing. I need to get back to her.
Very cool.
I used to be like really super on top of it. And actually, ever since I was diagnosed with asthma at the end of 2019, I haven't been able to hold like for a real long time like I could before. Like I've done like 21 day fix and, you know, ripped in 30 and things like that. But I don't know. It's like I can't, because I was so sick. It's like I just don't have that momentum like I used to. I feel like if I did something in the morning, the momentum would be there more. Because then when I come home and I want to relax and make dinner,
yep,
it's done. It's totally done. But this girl doesn't like to get up early. So there's that too.
Yeah.
So it's like...
And I will say, Tara, one thing I absolutely love about you is when you decide that you're going to do something, you are so positive about it and you pump yourself up and this is going to be so great. And this is what I'm doing. And I already know that this, this, and this is going to be a challenge for me. So here's what I'm doing to combat. And you're just so positive and you, you hype yourself up. And that is so, so good. Cause for people who have, depending on the type of anxiety, we can kind of like talk ourselves out of stuff. So that's why I sometimes like, I love talking to you when I'm having a bad day, just because by the time I get off the phone with you, it's just, it's so gone. Just because of your positivity and you're like, oh, it's so great. It's so doable. You got this. It's going to be great. You're just, you're very positive. And I so love that about you. And that's something that people who struggle with anxiety, they've got to tune in on. They got to be their hype man and they got to be their own cheerleader and get out of their head. You know, that little voice telling them that they can't do it. I don't know. Have any of you guys watched the show Big Mouth on Netflix?
No.
Oh my God. So
Annie has a lot of shows.
So one of the things I love about Big Mouth is when the kids start getting, because they're going through puberty, but when they introduce anxiety to the mix, it's a mosquito. And it makes total sense because, I mean, you know, those bugs don't sit still for 1 minute. They're all over the place. And it's just this little worry wart and it's in this little squeaky voice. And it's like, but oh my gosh, they're going to laugh at you. And what if you fart in front of everybody? And this is a really, really bad. I love that depiction of anxiety because I mean, for me with certain things, I will talk myself out of doing something. So I think that's one really awesome thing that you do. That I think people could take a page out of that book and, you know, instead of thinking about all the ways that it can't work, well, here's the challenges that I see. Here's how I can fix them and overcome them. Like, no matter how silly the solution is, take that mountain and make it smaller. And that's one thing I love that you do is you're like, I got this.
Well, thank you. Thanks. It's, I haven't always been like that. You know, it takes a lot of practice and I don't know. I try to be positive. I feel like you're very positive too. Like,
oh my God. Well, good. Because I feel like I'm the one that's always like bitching about stuff.
I've got a lot of friends that actually do kind of call me when they're at day because I don't know. I guess here's the deal. I've been to hell and back, like maybe not necessarily like where you've been, Eric. I've never been in the military, but as far as like what a woman can go through in life, I've pretty much gone there. And I'm not going to go into details, but like I at one point was homeless and I just worked really, really hard to get myself out of ruts and through, you know, not ruts necessarily, not ruts, not the word, like not even necessarily rock bottom, but maybe close. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. To where I feel like things can always be worse. So that's just kind of my MO in life because I've had the absolute worst. So yeah. That's just kind
of. But that's a huge strength. And it shows how strong you are that you went through that. And instead of allowing it to continue to hold you back, you know, looking at it from a standpoint of, you know, hey, I have already been through the worst, so that can't ever happen again. It's a huge, huge strength that I admire about you. So if I ever need a hype man, I'm like always hitting up Tara. Tara's my hype man. Eric, do you have a hype man?
Oh yeah. Yeah. My best friend, Tommy.
Awesome.
I don't want to say he's a hype man. He's more like my, instigator. Because there's been some questionable things that we've done together because of him, but he's also gotten me out of trouble as well. I've gotten him into trouble too, and I've put him in situations he probably shouldn't have, but let's just say there was a lot of alcohol involved. But no, usually when things go and I need someone, I call him. You know, He stepped up when my older brother passed away. I was blessed to have met Tommy shortly before that. And Tommy is basically the exact same as my older brother.
Aww.
So he's, for lack of better terms, he's my hype man.
I love it.
That's good. I think we all kind of need somebody that we can talk to when we're having those moments, you know. I don't really have anybody. I've got my hair. But yeah.
But, see, I tend to be that devil's advocate person. And that's me. Again, it's probably some of the anxiety and trauma response of, you know, I need to figure out, like, where is this person coming from? Because I don't ever want to be in that situation again. So... And I finally had someone one day be like, you know, here's the thing. Like, if I'm having a really, like, if I have something really bad happen to me, they're like, it depends on what I want. They're like, if I want devil's advocate, I'll call you. But if I want them to be like, man, F that bitch. They're like, I call somebody else because you're not that person. And I'm like, well, okay. So that was something that I had to learn. Because it could come off as like critiquing. Like, well, did you think about this? And did you think about that? And... So I'll ask my people. I'm like, okay, so do you want me to be like, F that bitch? Or do you want me to, like, you know, be devil's advocate? Let me know. And I have a friend who she'll do that. She'll be like, I'm so mad and I just need to vent. And in other words, I need to be like, F that bitch. And then if she says, hey, I need to look at this. Can you give me your opinion? I know that she wants, like, the actual, like, devil's advocate, you know, help me get out of my own head. On this situation.
Just so you know, I realized when I just said I don't have anybody, that's totally not true. Actually, Andy, I've definitely leaned on you for a lot of things, and I've opened
girl,
up.
Girl, I didn't take it that way. I didn't take it that way, baby.
About that, but yeah, I mean, you know, but you know, it's kind of interesting that you mention that. It's like whenever my mom would talk to my stepdad about anything, and he'd try to fix it. And give her solutions. She's like, I just want someone to listen. You know,
gotcha.
Sometimes you have like your friend that says, I just need to vent. You know, but sometimes you do need opinions and help with problems and you lean into your friends for that. Like I said, that's my therapist. I actually do see a therapist. So
I love that because that's something that needs to be destigmatized. My mom is very supportive about me seeing a therapist to kind of like figure out my anxiety and things like that. I will share that I do take medication. I won't say what because I don't know if I should or not, but I will say this for me. One of the most frustrating things about medication, and Eric, I don't know if you've ever had to take medication or not, but it's one of those that... You never know how it's going to react. Everybody is so different. And you usually got to take it for at least 4 weeks to figure out. And then they change the dosage and they up the dosage and they up the dosage. And if it still doesn't work, then they try something else. And I had the worst time with medication. And I ended up... So for people out there who say, well, I've tried to take medication to help and it doesn't work. It's one of those things and women, if you've ever took birth control, if you've ever took a pill, you're supposed to take it at the same time every day. and you're not supposed to sway from that. Medication for anxiety and depression, it's no different. You got to take it every day, pretty much at the same time. You got to let it build up, and just skipping a couple of days can mess you up. Just like birth control, skipping a couple of days could mess you up. But I had to take a DNA test to find out what was going to work for me, because we had tried so many different medications and nothing was working. But there is a test that you can do, and it's going to check to see, like, based upon your chemical makeup, how you're going to respond to certain drugs. So, and there were a lot that my body is apparently not responsive to. There's only three that are like a medium likelihood of working. And then there were only two that were considered to be favorable. So I'm finally on one that works for me. And I will say, if I like get out of a routine and I don't take it for a week, I can tell immediately. So I do want to say, like, you know, let's destigmatize going to a therapist. Let's destigmatize taking medication. My father just does not get it. My mother does, but my father just, it doesn't make sense to him. But so you got to do what works for you. There's no shame in going to therapy. There's no shame in taking a pill every day if it's going to help you feel normal and it's going to increase your quality of life. You know, I am not a doctor. Let me say that. But, you know, there shouldn't be any stigma in taking medication to feel better. I will say that. So I love that, Tara, you brought up, you know, going to a therapist, because there shouldn't be any shame in that. Especially if it helps you, especially for me, like learning to get out of my own way on stuff.
Yeah. Like when I was a teenager, I went to a lot of different doctors and I was actually on quite a few different meds. And I'll be honest with you. I felt like I went for my parents. I don't feel like I went for me. And then I'd say like my late 20s, I went to one too, and it was because of something like work related. So I went, mm-hmm. and again, I still don't feel like anything really was accomplished. Mm-hmm. Now, like, I knew I was ready. I sought this out myself. I talked to different people. I found who I feel comfortable with.
Nice.
And I've been going to her since September. So yeah, she's amazing.
That's awesome. I know I've heard you talk about.
She helps me validate myself, which I really good. Like. People need validation, you right. know? So yeah, I don't need to get like totally into it. I'm just saying like, I was actually ready. So, whereas when you're a kid, you're just being forced.
Exactly. And I think for some of us, because I don't even know what the divorce rate is now. But I mean, a lot of us, our first experiences with counselors and therapists and psychiatrists was, you know, hey, your parents are getting a divorce. How does that make you feel? Do you feel like it's your fault? Do you think it's because you touched yourself? I mean,
right.
That's a reference to Bob's Burgers, but anyway.
She really wants me to watch Bob's Burgers too.
Oh, that's so good. I think that's my coping is watching these cartoons. I don't know.
But Friends. If I could watch Friends until the cows come home, anytime I need anything normal, that's just gonna like, you know, mm-hmm. even help me sleep, this and that. Friends is like a warm blanket.
So that is one of the things that they talk about. They say that people who have anxiety, they prefer to watch reruns of their favorite shows because they already know what's going to happen. So there's no surprises. They've already went through the heartache of spoiler alert, spoiler alert, spoiler alert. Jon Snow dies. You already know that Jon Snow dies. So, oh my gosh, you've not watched that show, have you? Well,
no, I have not.
We just got a spoiler, baby.
What's the show? Don't tell
me. I don't want to tell you because then it's a spoiler. But you know, once you've went through that, like Grey's Anatomy, like they're, I mean, it's a fantastic show. And I, most of it I can go back and watch now. It doesn't bother me. But you mentioned like you'll watch Friends to go to sleep. I watch Bob's Burgers to go to sleep. And I know one of the things that was on my list was having trouble going to sleep. And I know, Tara, you mentioned that, you know, with the upcoming appointment and stuff, you were having trouble kind of sleeping and relaxing and getting enough rest. That's also a sign of anxiety. You can have insomnia. Or when something triggers you and makes you anxious, you could feel the need to go home and take a nap. Because that's your body's reaction to that anxious situation. But for me, my brain does not want to shut off. Mm-hmm. So what I'll do is I'll put it on Bob's Burgers. I set a timer and I turn the volume down kind of low. And it's one of those that I've seen it a million times. So there's no surprises. You know, most of the characters don't change. And I can listen to that. And usually in about two episodes, I'm out. And
that's
like
exactly what I do with Friends.
Yeah, like, exactly.
With tea.
Yep.
That, or that 70s show. Yeah, that's another one. That 70s show is another one that I have seen a million times. But yeah, that's exactly what I do. That's funny. I always do like, I put 2 hours on my sleep just in case I wake up.
Oh yeah. So I put, I used to put 120 minutes and now it's 180. I know. So, I mean, Eric, do you have to fall asleep to something, music or the TV or whatever?
No. I mean, I sleep with a fan on, but that's more so, because of the hearing tinnitus. Issues, the tinnitus and everything that I have, it's background noise and it just kind of calms that. But as far as like sleeping with the radio on or a TV on or anything like that, no, if I fall asleep on the couch, I fall asleep because I'm just dead ass tired.
Gotcha.
But no, as far as like going to bed, no, everything's got to be off except for like a fan. And that's, I mean, if I'm lucky enough to get good sleep.
Gotcha. Yeah. That's another problem of mine. Not only falling asleep, but staying asleep. Took me a while to figure out what worked for me to get the restful night's sleep. That's one thing I love about working out is, you will sleep better on the days that you work out. Doesn't matter if it's morning or evening. They say that if you work out in the mornings, they found that you fall asleep faster, which I struggle with. Anybody out there who's listening, if you can fall asleep in 15 minutes or less, just know that I hate you. Okay. Because I need an hour to lay in the bed and chill. And Tara knows this because we'll be talking about something and I'll be like, hey, I got to get off here. And she's like, Andy, it's 8 o'clock your time. I'm like, I know, but I have to wind down so that I can be asleep by 10 o'clock because of XYZ.
thing is 9 o'clock. I'll go lay down at 9 o'clock. So, because I like to be asleep by 10 o'clock. Plus, I have a cat that should be talking to us right now about her anxiety.
Yeah, I can't believe she's not squeaking.
Oh, well, she might have had some CBD for pets.
Oh, there you go.
Which is totally legal, by the way. Okay, so. But it really helps mama.
Nice. Exercise can really help with anxiety and depression for multiple reasons. And it also helps with sleep. I know Eric said that when he falls asleep, he's absolutely dead ass tired. For some people, if they do have anxiety, they can experience insomnia. So, or if they're asleep, they have trouble staying asleep. Any noise that I'm not used to wakes me up. So like when I go to festivals and we're camping, staying in a hotel, or when I go on the cruise, I wear earbuds so that I can sleep. Because if it's a noise that I'm not used to, it's going to wake me up and it's over with. And it just has to do with those needs to control things and the anxiety. for me.
Well, that
so
makes
yeah.
sense. Like if you're in a different place, like a friend's house or something, and you can't sleep. Like I know I can sleep in a hotel, no problem, because that's my space.
Gotcha.
If I'm staying at a friend's house on their couch, dude, I'm not gonna sleep. Like there's
same.
Yeah.
Same. I can say this, it was ages ago, but it was a birthday party. And I forget why I had to stay the night. I can't remember. I probably rode with somebody. But like I was prepared to not sleep very well. But of course, they were partaking in some greenery. And they're like, hey, come on. It's my birthday. You got to do this. But I'm telling you, it was the best sleep ever. I actually slept on the couch. No problem. Which was not a thing for me. I usually had to exhaust myself and then I would sleep for about 4 hours. I would be the first one awake and I would leave because people would be like, man, we got up. We were going to go get waffles and you were gone. I'm like, I mean, once I'm up, that's it. Especially if it's not my place. I do struggle to sleep in different places. Like you said, unless it's a hotel, because that's a place that you picked, right? And it's comfy. Yeah. But I'm one of those that I don't care if it's 4 o'clock in the morning. If it's an hour, if my house is like 2 hours or less, I'm just going to go ahead and drive home because I will sleep better in my own bed. Most definitely.
Well, and you know that they prescribe greenery for insomnia quite a bit. That's actually.
Yeah.
Something that they do. So that helps you to have a little devil's lettuce to.
I love it. Yeah, I hope they legalize it here. Dear God in heaven, because it was the best sleep ever. And if you do suffer with anxiety, that's one way that you can manage your symptoms. Again, we are not doctors. We are not licensed therapists. We are not, I don't know, disclaimer. We're not telling you how to manage your anxiety. We're just chatting about it.
Yeah.